In the days following her husband's death, Congresswoman Debbie Dingell was omnipresent, greeting people at the public visitation in Dearborn, going through two funeral masses, and then laying John Dingell to rest at Arlington National Cemetery. In an emotional Facebook post, the congresswoman wrote, "He did tell me not to cry and that I had work to do." And that is what she's doing. Here with us now is Dearborn's Democratic Congresswoman Debbie Dingell. Welcome back to Stateside.
Good to be with you.
Well, it's good to have you with us. And I know it's only been 13 days since John passed, but here you are talking to us. You are getting back to work. You're going to meetings. How did you know it was time to kind of turn your energies back to Congress and to the job?
Well, I think I don't really have a choice. The people of the 12th District elected me to serve them. And I can hear John in my ear saying, "Don't feel sorry for yourself. Get out there and get back to work." So I am.
And there you are. And as you were right in the middle of saying farewell to your husband last week at Arlington Cemetery, President Trump declared that national emergency to get the money he wants to build his wall. And we hear that House Democrats may soon file a resolution to block him from doing that. And of course, that's expected to pass. But even if there are enough GOP defections in the Senate to also pass a resolution, President Trump promises he's going to use his first veto to block it. Do you see any chance that Congress would override that promised veto?
You know, I think this is a real constitutional crisis now in our country. You know, there are three branches of government. Executive branch and the congressional branch have very clear roles, and there is a system of checks and balances, and the president has overstepped what the Constitution sets out. The congressional branch sets the budget. Now, there are many Republicans that, and the Senate particularly, who have expressed their concern about what he did and have warned him not to do it. I have signed on to the Castor Amendment, or the Castor Resolution, which will be introduced tomorrow, and Nancy will bring to the floor very quickly. I don't know if it'll be next week or the week after. I'm not that back into this work yet, but it will pass the House. But I suspect it will pass the Senate, as you said, and the question is, will there be enough votes to override a veto? And I don't know. I simply don't know. I think this is also going to end up in the courts. But this is not good for this country. We need to stop dividing ourselves. We've got to find a way that we work together better. This is a real constitutional crisis for us.
I also want to pivot over to the fact that you are the co-chair of the House Medicare for All Caucus, and we're hearing a new Medicare for All bill will be introduced soon. How soon do you think that might happen?
I think it'll happen next week. It was supposed to have happened the week that John died, so we postponed it. And I think it's very important. I think that every American's got a right to quality, affordable health care. You know, I know I'm luckier. John and I were luckier than 99 9/10 of the people in this country. And many of the experiences that we had, knowing that we're luckier than most, really do show you how broken our health system is. So establishing one entity, Medicare, to ensure that all Americans have access to it, would it help address the issue? It would improve the efficiency for providers who don't have to manage multiple insurance plans. It would let doctors and nurses focus more on treating patients than having to manage all the paperwork from countless insurance plans. And it would reduce the administrative costs, which are significantly lower in the traditional Medicare than private insurance plans. And we need to do something about it. I'll tell you something. John told me this is something you got to bring over the finish line. And I'm very committed to, I'm not quite sure what form it takes, how we get it there, but I know that every American's got a right to go to the doctor when they need to go to the doctor and not worry whether they can afford it or afford their medicine.
How do we pay for it?
Well, you know, one of the ways is just if you go to a single payer system, you eliminate all the money that's being put into all of this paperwork in this very bureaucratic system right now.
So it certainly needs to be, there's going to be a lot of dinging and a lot of thrashing out for you to get it across that finish line.
But that's what a good bill does. It takes a lot of people working together. You know, the first universal health care bill was introduced in the early 1940s. We got Medicare in 1965 because people finally looked at the number of seniors that were totally destitute, living in poverty, and we needed to do something. As Americans, we were embarrassed by that. The program that followed after that was the Children's Health Insurance Plan, because we all finally recognized that we need to make sure our children get the treatment that they need. So we got to do it right. We got to get a lot of opinions. We got to listen to people. We do have to figure out how we're going to pay for it. But I do believe by reducing the bureaucratic structure and going to one single payer, you will save probably almost as much money as you need to pay for it.
Congresswoman, there were so many extraordinary moments in those days surrounding John Dingell's death. And one was that opinion piece, My Last Words for America, published in the Washington Post. And am I correct, dictated to you on the very day he passed?
Well, he was having a difficult time writing a little, but he knew what he wanted to do. And he actually started telling us that this is the message he wanted read at his funeral. He had started dictating me on Wednesday, and then he kicked me out of the room. He said, "Woman, get out of here." And he dictated a portion of the piece to Christine, who was a wonderful friend who stayed with him when I was in Washington, though we were both there that day. And I kept saying, "John, Christine's got to get a break. Christine's got to get a break." And then Michael Duffy, who's a friend from the Washington Post, emailed me and said, "Would John like to do an op-ed?" And I showed him the note, and he said, "Woman, let's go." And yeah, he dictated it the day he died.
What do you think he wanted all Americans, from the highest levels of power to everyday people, to take away from his message?
I think that there were several things. I mean, first, that we've become way too partisan, and he's worried about the division he sees in this country, that we're at a precipice, and that our democracy, this is something I heard from him 40 years we were together. He always worried about our democracy and protecting and preserving it. But I think he was worried about the fear and hatred that he saw in this country, and that people working together had accomplished great things. You know, I didn't even know him. I was like, 2 years old when he started realizing we had to clean up our water. And when you look at the clips from the 60s, he was widely denounced when he introduced the first, the Clean Water Act to clean up our waters, that we need to protect and preserve our environment. He talked about Medicare, which he was one of the authors of and fought hard for many years. We can do great things together. We need to listen to each other. We have different perspectives. He often used to say, God gave us 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. We need to listen to each other, and that compromise isn't a dirty word.
There was another extraordinary moment, and that was the public visitation in Dearborn on that Monday the 11th. More than 1,600 people came to say goodbye to him, and there you were for nearly an entire time, and you were greeting people for hours. What did you take away from those moments with the public? What did you hear?
I was stunned at the turnout. I, again, cannot tell you how wonderful the fire and police were. John loved them. They were good friends. They have many stories, and they got me through a very difficult day. But the diversity of people from all communities, all walks of life, and everybody had a Dingell story. You know, some of them were very funny. He really was a very funny man. He had helped so many people. I cannot tell you how touched I was by everybody coming and saying their goodbyes and sharing their stories. It meant a lot. And I could hear my ear, and if he had been there, he would have shaken every hand, and I was going to shake every hand.
And when you think of all of that week, the outpouring of tributes, the funeral masses, burial at Arlington, what moment do you think would have pleased John Dingell most of everything?
You know, I think he would have been surprised at the outpouring. He was always, didn't think he had done a good enough job. Anybody who came in, he had asked if he had done a good enough job, were his Twitters okay. There were just so many. I mean, the outpouring in Dearborn was absolutely incredible, the mass there. He always told me he wanted to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery, and I think he was afraid that I wouldn't do it. I think I love Michigan and Michigan's home, so he even said to Christine, make sure I'm buried. Make sure she buries me at Arlington National Cemetery. And right when he was buried, 2 perfect V's of geese flew over. So Fred Upton called it the missing bird formation, but it was sort of that was hard. I got to tell you, that was very hard, but I think that would have made him happy. But the other thing that I think would have really touched him is the Mass, as you know, the planes couldn't get in on Tuesday. So the Mass at Holy Trinity, which is on the Georgetown campus, and both John and I are at Georgetown. John's a Georgetown prep, Georgetown undergraduate, Georgetown law school graduate, and I'm Georgetown undergraduate and graduate. But there were more than 160 of his colleagues, Republican and Democrats, from the House and Senate there. And Nancy Pelosi leaned over and said to Steny, Steny told me this later, Debbie was absolutely right. Everybody paused and came together, not as Republicans or Democrats, but as friends in a community. And community is the strength of democracy. And I think, you know, the other, when it was a really hard week, it was a very touching week, when he drove by the Capitol Plaza for one more time. It was also, you know, Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell were out there with the leadership of the House. Nancy Pelosi was incredible throughout this, but Kevin McCarthy's words on the floor of the House were wonderful, too. And someone said to me, I've never seen Mitch McConnell show emotion before that day. You know, we're human people. The institution of Congress is made up of human people. Maybe that's something we all need to, we're representative government. We represent the people. And we do have a great form of government, and we got to protect it every day.
12th District Democratic Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, thank you for spending time with us on Stateside.
Thank you.